MSW Media.
Spy Talk, a podcast at the intersection of intelligence, foreign policy, national security, and military operations.
Hi there, I'm Jeff Stein, and this is Spy Talk.
Tonight, we have important developments in our five-year investigation of mysterious brain injuries reported by U.S. national security officials. The injured include White House staff, CIA officers, FBI agents, military officers, and their families. Many believe that they were wounded by a secret weapon that fires a high-energy beam of microwaves or ultrasound.
That, of course, is Scott Pelley, the longtime 60 Minutes anchor, introducing a special two-segment report last weekend on the so-called Havana Syndrome, a mysterious years-long series of incidents in which many hundreds of U.S. government officials have complained of being felled by a loud, grinding, metallic sound in their heads that virtually paralyzed them with splitting, enduring headaches, vertigo, and other debilitating maladies. Over at our online Spy Talk newsletter and website, we previewed the 60 Minutes report with our own independent reporting, updating our story after the show aired. We found the 60 Minutes story, which offered new unreported incidents and an odd event involving a Russian former microwave radio expert arrested in Florida, persuasive on three counts. One, that something real did indeed victimize these Americans, many of them CIA, State Department, and Defense Department personnel. Two, that some kind of weapon was utilized. And three, that Russia was the likely perpetrator. But the 60 Minutes story was not bulletproof and raised as many questions as it sought to answer. One of those doubters, Michael Isikoff, is with us today. Many listeners will recognize his name for a slew of impressive, award-winning national security scoops over the decades at the Washington Post, Newsweek, NBC News, and Yahoo News. He's also the co-author of groundbreaking books, including Hubris, The Inside Story of Spin Scandal and the Selling of the Iraq War in 2006, and Russian Roulette, The Inside Story of Putin's War on America and the Election of Donald Trump, published in 2018. Mike Isikoff, welcome to Spy Talk. It's great to have you here.
Hey, it's great to be with you and part of your esteemed news site.
I feel like we've grown old together. We've been circling each other in Washington for decades now.
Didn't we play softball together about like 50 years ago?
We were teammates. I think you were a shortstop. Am I right?
I don't.
Anyway. Anyway, memories.
No, nobody could disprove that. Nobody could, I suppose.
Yes, if it wasn't seen, it didn't exist. Anyway, Mike, you have some serious questions about the 60 Minutes kerfuffle on Havana Syndrome. It's gotten a lot of attention. I wrote favorably about it, so I'm going to be in a little bit of a devil's advocate position here with you. But let's talk about your major problems with the 60 Minutes report,
right,
which tiptoed up to and got pretty darn close to fingering Russia. No definitive proof. I'm quick to say that,
right,
and have said that in my own reporting on it. But it just added a lot more circumstantial weight to the case against Russia for using some kind of weapon against American officials. But go on.
Well, look, it is good to have some humility and stress that we don't have all the answers about the phenomenon known as Havana Syndrome. There's a lot of conflicting information out there. There's a lot of conflicting studies in the scientific realm. But there are some firm conclusions, and let's be clear. I did a a podcast series on this a couple of years ago and concluded that the most likely, nobody questions that many, well over 100 U.S. diplomats and intelligence officers have experienced strange and debilitating symptoms. And, you know, there's no reason to doubt what they say about what they have experienced. And, you know, there is clearly medical issues here that have not been resolved.
To say the least.
But the very firm conclusion of the U.S. intelligence community, based on a rather extensive investigation by a unit of the CIA called the Global Health Incident Cell, concluded and this was released over a year ago, that it is very unlikely that a foreign adversary is behind any of these attacks. And I stress that. They looked at this cell, and I had a briefing with members of this cell like 2 years ago as they were wrapping up their investigation. And this was no, like, you know, paper study. They went into the field, they examined scores of these incidents, they got all the intel, they, you know, they went into the buildings where it was supposedly took place, they, you know, knocked down floorboards, windows, examined everything, looked at the background of all these people. And the conclusion of this CIA cell was that they could not find evidence of a foreign adversary in any of them that they looked at. And this was seven U.S. intelligence agencies examined this, and five of them concluded highly unlikely that there was any. And two of them, one of them said they had low confidence in that assessment based on gaps in the intelligence, and another didn't weigh in at all. But, you know, among the many problems I had with the 60 Minutes piece is you would barely know that from watching this rather extensive, like, you know, it was two segments of 60 Minutes playing up this. And, you know, when it takes you sort of two thirds of the way through it and well into the second segment before they even hint at the fact or have one sentence saying, well, yeah, the U.S. intelligence community investigated this and they couldn't find any evidence for what we're now telling you. Right. The totality of what they said was the Office of DNI said last year it's very unlikely a foreign adversary is responsible. But the DNA also acknowledged that some intelligence agencies had only low or moderate confidence. Well, it would have been a little more accurate to say, first of all, most intelligence agencies concluded very unlikely. So that was like, you know, the one tip off right off the way. Are they going to deal with the fact that what they are saying is being disputed by responsible officials in the U.S. government? Doesn't mean responsible officials in the U.S. government are always right. Jeff, you and I know that. They can often be wrong, but it is at least worth hearing what they had to say. And nobody from the CIA or the intelligence community was interviewed in this piece to explain what they did and how they reached the conclusions that they did.
Okay. Now,
so that's number one.
Let me break it down.
Okay.
Where your, okay, sure. Your objection. Let's take them a little bit one at a time. And I want to get.
But I got many more. I start off with.
So that. I thought, yeah, I would just help break it down a little bit. I want to return to this idea of avoiding or saying flatly that there's no foreign responsibility for this. But for the moment, let's break it down into at least a couple of the issues. One is the technical capability of inflicting these injuries. You and I, in our side conversations, we've talked about the difficulty of deploying a weapon that would be capable of, technically capable of inflicting this kind of issue, this kind of malady upon its targets. And the other one is the practical impossibility of hauling such a weapon around, let's say Lafayette Square, apart from the White House, where a couple, according to reporting, a couple of the incidents took place right on the White House campus.
One of them was repeated in that 60 Minutes piece, mm-hmm. and it was, you know, been dismissed by U.S. government officials who looked at it as ludicrous. Baloney. But, you know, yeah. I can explain why in a moment.
Let's talk about the technical capability. What are the problems? We have a power issue for one and a projection issue. Talk about that.
Yeah. Well, where's the weapon? What is it? Where does it look like? You know, how big is it? How does it get, you know, all over the world? You know, I mean, nobody's ever seen this weapon. Nobody ever knows. We have no intelligence reporting about what it looks like, where it's, how it works, how it's deployed. I got all excited at first when I saw the preview for the 60 Minutes piece, because it starts out with that like car chase in Florida, where a Russian spy is evading the cops, and then they finally catch the Russian spy who apparently had all this technical background for Russian military intelligence. I thought, oh, we're going to find the weapon in the car. But no, we didn't find the weapon in the car. So we're still basing all this on a weapon that may or may not exist, but nobody has ever seen. So that's, like, you know, I think a huge problem. Now, there has been some reporting that it would require a rather refrigerator size weapon to do the damage that has been suggested here.
Well,
maybe that's not the case.
A power source, yeah.
Or some power source.
A weapon of a microwave type weapon or a sound emitting kind of weapon would require a huge, huge power source.
Right.
Now, right. I have to say, I interviewed Dr. Mark Giordano at Georgetown, and who, you know, is one of the leading scientists in the area of electromagnetics and the ethics of developing these kinds of weapons and so on. And he told me that the problem of the size of the battery had been largely solved, that 4 or 5 years ago, you couldn't have done this, but which raises another question of incidents reported going back years and years. Right. Before Havana.
Has he built such a weapon?
No, but...
Has he seen such a weapon? Has he seen a picture of such a weapon?
Again, I mean, playing devil's advocate again. I tracked down a whole bunch of patent applications and patent grants by DOD to develop microwave and sound, ultrasound weapons. And so... And Giordano told me, and he has a security clearance himself, he said a lot of this work is being done. It's classified work now. But you can see scores and scores upon patents given to inventors and companies to develop just this kind of weapon.
Well, I mean, look, if somebody's got a patent for it, presumably they would have done something with the patent, built it. I mean, let's see it. We have not to date. And, you know, when he says he's got a security clearance, I'm sure he does, and that there's classified. The CIA, the Global Health Incident Cell, would have had full access to all the classified intelligence on this, and yet they reached the conclusion they did. But on the science, and this is actually one of the more serious problems I have with the 60 Minutes piece, because it starts out, the very first sentence that Scott Pelley says in this, tonight, we have important developments in our 5-year investigation of mysterious brain injuries reported by U.S. national security officials.
Mm-hmm.
Well, a little inconvenient, but, you know, a week and a half before this piece ran, the National Institutes of Health released a extensive study of more than 80 people who had experienced Havana syndrome symptoms and compared that to a control group. And then there was a secondary study with a smaller amount, I think it was 60. But, and its conclusion was that there was no evidence of brain injuries whatsoever that they could detect. So you have now, look, granted, scientists are going to debate just as journalists debate, lawyers debate, you know, politicians debate. There could be differing views, but you would barely know that such a study, which debunks the very first sentence of Scott Pelley's piece, existed until you get two-thirds of the way through the entire piece, way down into the second segment, and they tell you, this month, the National Institutes of Health reported results of brain scans. NIH said there's no evidence of physical damage, but the medical science of so-called anonymous health incidents remains vigorously debated. Well, okay, but you have an authoritative study by a premier government agency that just released a report. You would think that maybe somebody from that study could have been interviewed for this piece and give their perspective on why they reached the conclusions that they reached.
I happened to interview one of those people.
One of them who did not buy into what the conclusions was. I would like to hear from the scientists who reached the conclusion that they did and why they reached that conclusion.
Fair enough. And that person should have been on camera. But of course, right. You know, television, compact reporting, a lot of stuff gets dropped on the editing floor. I'll just quote back to you what Dr. James Giordano, I said Mark earlier, I think he was a hockey player. Dr. James Giordano, who's the chief of neuroethics studies program at Georgetown and was consulted on these studies, he said that advances in technologies, and this is what I reported last week, advances in technology allow a pulsed microwave or ultrasound beam to disrupt brain functions without leaving evidence of an intrusion. And he gave an example of the bends. He said, in other words, they induce functional disruptions, not necessarily structural ones, he told me in a phone interview. It's like what happens with decompression sickness, known as the bends. It disrupts without a trace. Not much different from a forensic point of view than a passing stomach ache. In other words, you have an illness and it disappears without leaving a trace. He says, go on, this gets a little bit more technical. You may get micronecrosis, where small areas of the tissue die after a pulsed microwave or ultrasound attack. But that's not going to necessarily be evident, in other words, show up in an MRI or more advanced imaging tests.
Maybe, possible. I don't intend to be definitive here because, you know, obviously this is an ongoing issue and, you know, new evidence could come in. And, you know, we could talk about some of the new evidence that 60 Minutes presented. But I do think that, you know, to be fair and dispassionate about this, you've got to report that this is a vigorously disputed issue.
For sure.
And that when authoritative government agencies say they've just done a study and they don't find this,
you have to take it seriously.
You know, I'm sorry. Yeah. You have to take that seriously. And, you know, look, I mean, in the 60 Minutes piece, they start out, you know, they say right off the bat, brain injuries. Then they bring in David Relman, respectable Stanford scientist who did a 2022 report, which concluded that microwave directed energy could explain the symptoms. It could be evidence of an injury to the auditory and vestibular system of the brain. It could, but that was 2 years ago. And when you have a 2024 report that came out a week and a half before your piece airs, you know, maybe you want to tell people about that, a little higher and more prominently than burying it all the way down at the bottom of your piece in one sentence and dismissing it as though it's not anything. But
is this an issue of facts getting in the way of a good story?
Yeah. I think so. And look, I just think as a matter of, you know, fair, responsible journalism, you can't turn this all into an argument that completely ignores all the extensive evidence that cuts the other way. Now, let's talk about the few examples that they did cite to suggest. And oh, by the way, one thing they say to sort of bolster their case that the Russians are zapping American diplomats and the intelligence officers all over the world is that of the cases they're talking about, the common connection is the officials all were working on matters related to Russia. Mark Zaid, prominent national security lawyer who has represents many of the victims of the very real symptoms that people have experienced, says that flat out. By the way, full disclosure, Mark Zaid has also been my lawyer on FOIA requests. For all I know, he's been yours as well. He represents a lot of journalists and he does it gratis. And God bless you, Mark, for doing that.
He has not, but I've known Mark for decades.
but that's simply not true. Okay. Because, you know, well over 100, when I did my podcast, one of the first people I interviewed was a woman at the U.S. Embassy in Havana. She was the HR officer, human resources, and she was talking about getting zapped. She had nothing to do with Russia. Mm-hmm. You know, the wife of the Justice Department attaché in Tbilisi, Georgia. Well, you know, Georgia was once part of the Soviet Union. Okay. But the wife of the why? What? How is that? But here's one of the sort of the dog that didn't bark instances that got me. If the Russians had this super secret weapon that could cause these debilitating effects on it, their targets, and cause them to get confused and lose balance and get slurred and have early onset of Alzheimer's and they can't remember things and basically completely discombobulate them. Wouldn't you think they would want to use it where in places they care about the most? For instance, Ukraine. Like, we have had no reports about Ukrainian officials or U.S. officers during the current war getting zapped with microwave weapons. They made something of the fact that in the NATO summit last year in Lithuania, a senior Defense Department official experienced symptoms consistent with Havana syndrome. That official, the Pentagon has said, was actually not part of Secretary Austin's delegation team that went to the summit, but he was there. Okay. You know who else was there? Zelensky. He was in Vilnius and in public speaking to a crowd, and then he attended the summit and, you know, presumably had his entourage with him. If you're the Russians and you want to attack somebody in Vilnius, Lithuania during the NATO summit, wouldn't you want to go after Zelensky, your arch nemesis, who you're waging a war with, rather than, you know, some anonymous U.S. Defense Department official? I mean, none of this makes any sense. The 60 Minutes piece repeated what I said before was, I think, the most ludicrous example they have cited, which is Olivia Troy, who was the Homeland Security advisor to Mike Pence, who talked about walking out of the Eisenhower Executive Office building, part of the White House complex, one day, and as she's walking down the steps, getting zapped, experiencing vertigo, getting dizzy, having Havana syndrome symptoms right inside the White House complex.
Seems improbable.
It seems improbable. First of all, number one, by the way, their premise, everything connects to Russia. Olivia Troy had no responsibility for Russia policy. Okay. She's a mid-level official at that point. She hadn't gone public talking about her dissents from the Trump White House. She was not a well-known individual. So somebody, some Russian operative would have to have had insider intel about her precise movements inside the White House complex. And then as she's walking down the steps, presumably from Lafayette Park or across the street in Pennsylvania Avenue, zapping her with some sort of microwave weapon, and the Secret Service, the U.S., nobody notices anything.
And she's not
the
only.
Does that make sense to you? And she's not the only example.
She's not the only person in Washington who have reported, let's say,
right,
an incident, a debilitating incident. It was a former intelligence advisor at the DHS.
Well, Miles Taylor, who was the deputy, was also in the same previous 60 Minutes piece saying, you know, he was at home on Capitol Hill one night and suddenly he gets zapped, looks out the window, and some car drives away. I mean,
okay,
you know, what? I mean, how probable is any of this? And, you know, I when I did my podcast, John Cohen, who was the chief of Intel for Homeland Security, you know, walked me through this and he didn't buy any of it. He just said, this is wildly improbable and there's really no evidence. And yet here's 60 Minutes, the most watched TV news show in the country, just playing it up as though it's a fact that somebody walking out of the White House was zapped by a secret microwave weapon that nobody has ever seen.
Let me circle back to in my role as a devil's advocate here.
Sure.
Let me circle back to again to Dr. Giordano, who said,
yeah.
So what we've said, this is the quote from my piece, my interview with him. So what we said with regard to Havana syndrome was very simple. And I'll go to my death saying this, Giordano said. Something happened to the people at Havana. It doesn't surprise me that the NIH report says that we don't find any structural indications of damage to their brain. Neither did we. He also said he never used the word weapon. He just talked about the characteristics of the damages and the attack and the incident.
Well, that's very interesting in and of itself, by the way.
It is.
That we may not be talking about a weapon here.
That's right. We may be talking about some other phenomenon. We don't want to get into alien spacecraft as yet. Let's go on to something else. A larger context here is that, as Giordano said, I'm not over relying on Giordano on this particular point, but I'll just use what he said to me. You have to take a look at what nations are doing research work in this development, test evaluation, and possible applications for use of these devices. And they include the United States and some of its international industrial as well as military intelligence allies and international cooperatives, as well as our trans-Pacific competitors, i.e. China, and our transatlantic competitors, i.e. Russia. And that's been going on for decades. We know this. We also know that Russia started applying microwaves and crude, rough, overwhelming force at the Russian embassy, at the American embassy.
At the U.S. embassy in Moscow. This went on for years.
Late 50s through the 60s and so on.
Yeah.
So in other words, Giordano says, if the big, and I'm using his quotes here because it's easier to sum up, if the big three, the U.S. and its allies, plus China and Russia, all possess ongoing research development, test evaluation, and prior, if not current, use programs in these technologies, the question then becomes, is it therefore possible that individuals in Cuba were exposed to this type of technology somehow, some way? And he opens the possibility that these may, you know, have been technical experiments going on that just went awry, that there wasn't any weapon involved.
Look, we have to be open to all possibilities. I mean, you know, I spent some time in Cuba when I was doing this podcast. And some people were struck at the embassy, the reopened U.S. embassy, which is pretty prominently positioned, you know, not far. You can walk to it from the Nacional, the mm-hmm. Grand Hotel. It's right on the
waterfront. Yeah.
You know, that grand boulevard, mm-hmm. you know, on the waterfront. So again, you know, you have to come back to the question of how would this have worked? You know, where would the microwave beams have been coming from, wielded by who, you know, under what's, there's just the bottom line point is that when you look at those cases in Cuba and how they sort of metastasized after a few incidents started to get attention and then were played up, guess by who, you know, at the time, Marco Rubio and Robert Menendez, the two most anti-Cuban senators in Congress who were, you know, really wanted to blame all this on Russia and use it as an excuse for reversing Obama's policy, you know, opening up relations to Cuba, which were completely reversed, you know, in citing, you know, when we pulled people out of the embassy that we had just reopened was because of this. And yet even today, I mean, I think I saw Zaid quoted saying, you know, there's absolutely no evidence the Cubans had anything to do with this. Right.
Sure.
That's Mark Zaid, the lawyer who represents the victims of all this.
You know, it seems like we're in the UFO quandary territory now.
Yeah.
We have all these incidents being reported over years. And, of course, the video that surfaced a couple of years ago with the Navy pilots and so on, with these, whatever they were, vehicles or phenomena that they were chasing and observing, and all the scientific reports said, bullshit, it can't happen. You know, it defies physics. This cannot happen.
Yeah.
And that's an absolute parallel to where we are with Havana syndrome now. The science says, it can't, except for, you know, Dr. Giordano, who I quoted at length, says it can't happen. And yet we have all these incidents.
Right. And just to be clear about this, Russian intelligence operations are highly sophisticated, highly effective, very often lethal, and, you know, are a real thing. I mean, we've just had reports in the last week about the Russians bribing, you know, members of EU parliament in, you know, in the Czech Republic, in Belgium, in Poland. We had the guy, the Russian defector who was just murdered in Spain, you know, once again, evidence that the Russians, you know, will engage in lethal assassinations
forever
against targets who they view as threats or traitors.
So if anyone would develop this kind of weapon and use it against Americans, it would be the Russians.
Right. But when you look at the people who have been affected by this, I mean, we're not talking about, you know, Russian defectors or, you know, Navalny or Nemtsov or any of the Russians who are a real irritants to Vladimir Putin. We're talking about the HR director at the Havana embassy.
And to be fair, CIA operations.
And CIA people as well.
For sure.
No, certainly. But all I'm saying is that there's, you know, what the CIA Global Health Incident Cell concluded is they could find no connections, no common theme among all the cases that they developed.
I must say, I find it a bit ironic to hear you using the CIA as your
ODNI.
I said before,
we don't believe the CIA in everything it says. And we have had, both of us, long history in challenging CIA conclusions, but usually conclusions that are fronting for political interests, right?
Good point. I
mean, yeah. And in here, I don't see the political interest that being served by the CIA saying what they're saying.
We're going to leave it at that. But speaking of Russia, which you've been seeped in for some time.
Yes, I have.
And you've got a trip to Europe coming up?
Poland. I'm going to be in Poland next week. Yeah.
How come?
Well, I was invited to speak at a forum about U.S. politics and its impact on the war in Ukraine, on the future of NATO, on European security, and all those.
All the more
wonderful things.
All the more reason to be delighted that you're joining the Spy Talk family of contributing editors. And we're looking forward to your contributions over time. Mike, you're always incredibly well informed and fun to talk to. And this is no exception. So thanks for coming on the Spy Talk
podcast.
Anytime,
man. Anytime.
Take care. Travel safe.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
And that's it for this week's Spy Talk. Be sure to check out our complete podcast archive on Apple or wherever you get your podcasts. And if you haven't already, do check out the SpyTalk.co news site on Substack, where we offer a steady diet of scoops and original analyses on the intersection of intelligence, foreign policy, and military operations. Just Google Spy Talk and you'll quickly find your way there. This edition of the Spy Talk podcast was smoothly produced, as always, by Kanai and edited by Molly Hawkey for MSW Media. And that's it. See you around. I'm Jeff Stein.
For more original reporting and insights like this, subscribe to SpyTalk.co on Substack and follow us on Twitter at @talk_spy. If you enjoyed our podcast, subscribe and leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
MSW Media.